Nobody likes Risk.
What about Risky Business?
Nobody wants to watch Risky Business. I feel like Tom Cruise is highly problematic at this point.
Does that need a whole log to tell us that? Tom Cruise is risky.
If you made a Risk log for the movie Risky Business, it would just be like everything about Tom Cruise. That's problematic.
That's different from dangerous.
But like, how can we reduce the risk of Tom Cruise?
Obsolescence?
I mean, it's trying, but he just keeps making Mission Impossible movies.
It's impossible to reduce the risk of Tom Cruise. I think let's just call it the danger log.
The danger log?
Yeah.
No, because that sounds cool. He feels the need for speed, Jason.
Never say that again.
Welcome to The Critical Path with Mary and Jason, a podcast about business development, company culture, and loving the place you work just a little bit more. This is episode 9. And we're going to be talking about the 6 documents your project shouldn't be without. So it's really common in construction for everyone to recognize the value of our tools. We understand that if we didn't have hammers, if we didn't have lifts, if we didn't have scaffolds, then we would be hard-pressed to get our work done. But it's easy to lose track of the fact that we also need another kind of tools. We need the kind of tools that we use to watch our numbers and watch our bottom line. So this week we're going to be talking about how you can track some of these things and some of the tools that Jason has historically used on his projects.
What do we need to track?
I think that's the question I'm supposed to ask you.
What does it matter?
What does it matter? Well, what does it matter?
What does it matter?
Illuminate us, Jason.
Well, I think some of the best builders that I've ever known were typically the least good at knowing where their money is and understanding what data should be telling them. So much of current project management method for the majority of the companies who actually build things comes down to how does the project feel to them? What is their gut telling them about how the project's doing? If they sit down with the company owners and executives and they're asked about the project, typically the answers that they provide are descriptors. They're not measurable. They're feelings about how the project's going. And those feelings can change from day to day to day. So the biggest problem is that we're not using math, we're not using data to predict the direction or the trajectory of the project.
Well, and a secondary problem there is, so let's say we have a project manager and let's say that his gut is just right on. Let's say that he can feel and he can successfully run project after project after project just by feel. Still, this is where we reach the point where we have people doing things and they can't hand anything off because they can't communicate how any of that works. You can't train a person to have a gut feeling about something. You can train someone to put data into a spreadsheet.
And even when we have gut feelings, sometimes those are just flat out wrong.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. So there are a handful of tools that I've relied on over the years to make sure that the projects that I'm running are always in control. And many of these tools we develop, customize, and build out for our current client base. And many times when folks are experiencing problems on construction projects, it can point back to one of these 6 documents not being in place.
Absolutely. So document number 1 is the risk log. So tell us a little bit about what the risk log is.
Well, risk on a construction project or business in general is the single biggest challenge, the single biggest thing that you should be watching, more importantly than just about anything else. And when we put risk in its most simple terms, we're asking what could go wrong and what is the likelihood that it could go wrong. So on a construction project, I'm sure everyone has experienced many things going wrong, and many times it seems like many things go wrong all at once and it feels like we couldn't predict it.
Well, this is a great example though too of gut feeling, in that I think a lot of times people go in and they say, well, I knew that that might go sideways. I knew that that might go wrong. But we don't actually quantify that in any way or write it down.
So the important part about the risk log is we're identifying all of the potential pitfalls that we could be facing. So we're comfortable with looking at safety and managing to safety in terms of identifying hazards and then putting steps in to mitigate the hazards. And then we proceed as planned. We should be approaching our construction projects in exactly the same fashion, but instead of fall hazards, we're identifying non-payment issues. We're identifying safety issues on the project as it relates to risk and dollars. We're talking about failure of key items not being on site on time that really make a difference to the critical path. So we should be identifying what those risk items are for each project at the beginning of the project, really before we even sign the contract at all. And that should feed into whether or not we want to take the project based on how much risk is associated. Can we properly insulate ourselves from that risk in order to ensure that our profit and our company is safe?
So when we get to know clients and we come on board, what would you say is the most common way people right now are tracking their risk?
In their head.
So it's just in someone's head, maybe at a meeting, they discuss it, like at best?
They're largely not tracking risk items at all. And there are a handful of items bouncing around in different people's heads, but there are seldom action items or action plans built out to address those.
So that leads us to the next piece. So if I'm going to go now and I'm going to build my risk log, all of these tools, really most of these tools, Excel is probably the easiest way to build these things out for yourself.
Or you could build it in a notebook.
You could build it. Well, and that's what
Keep
I said in the show notes.
Yeah.
I said whether you're using a notebook, whether you have custom software, mm-hmm. whether you're using Excel. But let's assume for this conversation that we're going to use Excel. Then what are the things, what are the fields that you need? What are the things that you need to track in your risk log?
So the items that I care to track as it relates to risk is what is the short descriptor of the risk item? What is the associated dollar with it? The first instance that we became aware of it. So let's say this risk item is failure of a long lead item to hit the site and we're going to have liquidated damages. So liquidated damages related to procurement item.
Mm-hmm.
That would be the short descriptor. Item two would be what's it worth? If that goes completely wrong, let's say in this example it would cost $100,000.
How much do we stand to lose mm-hmm. altogether if this goes worst case scenario?
Yep.
Okay.
And then the third step would be or the third field would be, what are the actions that we're taking? What are the steps that we're taking to mitigate that risk?
Mm-hmm.
And then the piece after that would be, what is our risk today? So the hope is that as we move forward in time, we're continually reducing that dollar number as we get more confident that the steps we're taking mm-hmm. are reducing the risk associated with that item.
So initially that field said $100,000 because when we first flagged that issue, that was the total risk.
Mm-hmm.
But as time goes by, hopefully that we'll have a current number that gets lower and lower because our current risk is less than that $100,000 as we start to remedy what's going wrong.
Right. And then in that situation, we have the ability to demonstrate to our bosses and our ownership exactly what it is that we're doing to mitigate the risk, and we're communicating the distance that we've traveled in reducing that risk number.
Right.
So
if you show up to your boss and you say, sorry, but we have a $40,000 risk, that's one conversation. If you show up to your boss and say, we brought this $100,000 risk down to a $40,000 risk, that's a better conversation to have.
It is, but in addition to that, I would say this is what we're doing to mitigate it, and mm-hmm. we welcome any ideas you have to reduce it further.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So then that way it turns it into a conversation rather than a shouting match or some sort of failure.
Right.
So the important part about the risk log is that it is a living document. It should travel with us through the project, and we need to make sure that we're updating it on a weekly or monthly basis, depending on the level of risk that we're facing.
And what about visibility of that? Is that something that just the project manager should edit and add to, or should other people be accessing that document? And then even if no one is editing it except for the PM, should other people have visibility of that document?
Well, that my general philosophy in construction projects is that almost everything, pretty much everything, the team should have visibility of if they want it. I look at the project delivery in almost a communistic view where everybody is a part of the system. Everybody needs general information about where we're at. I would leave editing rights to the PM typically, but there could be exceptions. But it's important that everybody understands where we're at so we can always watch our risk items together. So 12 eyes or 15 eyes, if you only have one, yeah, are better than two.
Well, and so much of the time, some of those really great solutions that we never would have thought of, mm-hmm, come from the field,
yeah,
because those are the people who are looking at these risks, looking at these problems, seeing them be solved on a regular basis. So sometimes they can have unique ways to solve problems that the rest of us never even thought about.
I'm a big fan of incentivization, and we can talk about this in a later podcast, but if we have a $100,000 risk that's on the table and we can incentivize our team to reduce that or eliminate it, what is that worth internally?
Right.
Is that a $1,000 bonus? Is that some sort of weekend away, something special? If they can, we identify a real and present risk, if we can eliminate that, there's some serious value there.
And then if there are incentives to eliminating those risks, then that keeps people looking at the risk log on a regular basis, because instead of being a boring document, it has now become a potential for prizes. Mm-hmm.
And in addition to tracking the risk log, I will use the risk log to inform the profit projection for the project. And so we can talk about profit projection, but when we take that risk log, I will assume that all of the dollars associated with that risk log are real and they will affect the project profit.
Right. So whatever we're at risk of losing, we look at our numbers as though we've already lost it and see what that's going to mean.
Right. You will behave and you'll manage in a different way if your profit is thinner.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So document two, the procurement log.
What is procurement anyway?
That's a good question.
That's for suckers.
Procurement? I think a lot of our clients might disagree.
So procurement log is a document that I use to track all of our long lead items, all of our risk items. When we put a project together, there are pieces that are commonly readily available. You can go to the store or a supplier and pick those up today. But then many items are custom built, custom made, manufactured, oftentimes in different countries. And it's sometimes supplied by owner or supplied by somebody else. It's important that we identify 100% of the items that we're going to need to supply on the procurement log on day one of the project. So typically we could review the submittal, typically we could review the specification to identify all of our lead items for the project, and we want to identify all of the critical items for the project, and then the next step would be to identify when they're due on site.
That makes sense.
So when do we actually need these products on site ready to install?
So how are most people tracking procurement lead times when you come into the company, when you get to know people?
There's probably a 50-50 split. It seems like half of the people are just loosely tracking them in their heads. There is no consolidated list of where these items are. They're largely operating by memory or trauma that they've had in the past when they've forgotten to order a thing. And they just do the best they can to piece it in. But ultimately that provides very poor communication to the customer, whoever that may be, because they're just juggling all of these balls rather than putting the balls into formed rows and columns with dates on there.
Right.
The other half will create a log of submittals or procurement items, but then they typically don't identify what day they're actually due on site. That's critical information because, number one, we need to know when these products are actually needed. Mm-hmm. We don't need them necessarily sooner, but we need them on a specific day. When we identify when those products are needed on site, we confirm all of those dates with the customer to make sure that we get their buy-in that, yes, this is when we need these products on site. And then from that point, we back off the date, we basically subtract days that will communicate how many days it's going to take to procure that item. And then we back off days for submittal submission, submittal approval, submittal review. We back off days for mock-ups or samples. And then we come back to the drop-dead date that we have internally for every single one of those items. So we can see exactly when something becomes critical months before it's actually due on site.
Right. So then your fields here would have, you'd have your procurement item, you'd have its due date on site, and then
procurement days.
So field for how many days it's going to take to procure this thing.
Mm-hmm. Approval date.
Approval date. So right. That's
so when the products have actually been approved and then you can order them.
Right.
Right. And then submittal review duration.
Mm-hmm.
Right, because we need to know how many days they're allowed to review those submittals.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have initial submittal submission date. So right. When did we send in our first submittal?
Right.
Right. So the important part about that is that allows us to understand where all of these pieces are at any given time.
Right.
And as long as we hit our own internal drop-dead dates.
So would we have a field for that drop-dead date?
Absolutely.
And then if you're using Excel, you could even cause it to calculate that out for mm-hmm. you so that as you change numbers in the other fields, it'll automatically change for you.
Mm-hmm.
And you could even be able to set it up so that it turns red
yep.
at a point that it goes critical.
So we're watching for those dates and we'll know weeks ahead of time as we're approaching that drop dead date. And then we can communicate the urgency of each individual item to the customer. Most often we never communicate that to the customer. And then we get into the situation where now we have to pay for expedited shipping.
Right.
Now we have to pay for overtime for installation. And if we would have just communicated the status of the lead items at the time we submitted this, we wouldn't have accepted that responsibility at all.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end, it means that we are better informing our customer and we're able to better manage our risk.
That makes sense. So does that cover procurement load?
That is the short of it.
All right. Document 3. Let's talk about profit projections.
Profit projections. What's that?
So what is that?
So a profit projection is a document that will predict our profit on the project. So many times we'll wade into a project and we're waist deep in the project. And we're looking at our bank account and recognizing that we don't feel like we're having as much money as we should, or we mm-hmm. feel like the project is going good. But what does that mean? We feel that the project is going well. So what a profit projection does is we set this document up right at the beginning of the project, and we get a snapshot of what our anticipated profit margin is going to be for the job. Are we making more profit over time, or are we making less profit over time?
And I think that over time is important mm-hmm. because it's one thing to understand what our profit margin is, but to understand, is that growing? Mm-hmm. Is it shrinking? That's an important piece of information to have.
The majority of contractors make less money, a smaller margin as time goes by.
Right.
Right. So contractors will typically lose money the longer the project goes on. We've all felt it. We've all experienced it. It's important to be able to predict which direction we're trending with respect to profit. And the profit projection gives us that information.
Right. So when we meet a new client, how are they usually tracking profit projection? Because it feels like this is something that hopefully most people have some finger on the pulse of.
The majority of companies, many companies, are tracking profit projection as a single line item.
Right.
So they're looking at the overall profitability of a project. So whether you're running a $100,000 project or a $100 million project, I think we could associate that it's more than just one number. When we're making money and when we're losing money, we're making money and losing money not just as an aggregate, but on each individual line item, we're making money and we're losing money.
So like by each change, by each impact.
Mm-hmm. Also by each floor.
Right.
So if we're building something that is 10 floors tall and we have to repeat our work on every floor, I want to understand whether or not I made money or lost money on that first floor.
So when you do floor one, you want to understand, if I do the rest of the floors just like I did floor one, what is my profit going to look like at the end of the project?
And that would help us understand whether or not there's a problem.
Right.
Early.
Right. And then if floor one did work out well, and then we do floor two, then we want to know at the end of floor two, are we still projecting? Mm-hmm. Are we still looking as good as we looked after floor one?
Are we improving or are we getting worse?
Getting worse.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And so the majority of folks are tracking it with a single line item, and that prevents them from understanding where the problem is, if there's a problem.
Right.
It also could mask there being a problem at all. So maybe 50% of your work is budget running over and 50% of your work is running under. And because you're looking at it as just an aggregate, you don't see those improvement areas.
Right.
You don't understand where you could be doing better than you are right now.
Right. That makes sense. So then if I'm going to sit down and build my profit projection spreadsheet, what do I need to know? What do I need to build?
So the most important parts are identifying the discrete scopes of work that you're responsible for on that project. So this oftentimes looks very close to your schedule of values. We want to make sure that you have all of your work items lifted from your estimate. And then from that point, we want to make sure that we're identifying how much did we sell that scope for and how much do we think it's going to take to complete that scope. And then that would leave us with our gross profit margin. So then we should be able to predict how many dollars of gross margin will come out of the project for each scope. And then as we move forward in time, we want to make sure that we're identifying how much money we've spent on that individual scope paired with the percent that scope is complete.
Right.
And then that will give us individual visibility to understand what our gross profit margin looks like on each individual line.
Right. Because maybe we are only at 75% of our budget on a certain scope, so we think we're doing great, but in fact, we're only 25% done with the work on that scope, which
That's
means
right.
we're not doing as well as we think we are.
And it could be that we're overperforming, we're doing better than we thought on some other work areas,
mm-hmm.
but because it all muddles together, we don't have visibility that actually we're being held up or production is being hurt in a handful of particular areas.
Right, because the places,
correct.
Right, the places we're overperforming are going to mask the places we're underperforming.
Yeah.
And then if you keep moving, you could find that you finish that work that you were overperforming on,
mm-hmm.
and all of a sudden all of your productivity tanks and you have no idea what happened.
Yeah. Projects also tend to get less productive over time,
mm-hmm.
as people get stressed and rushed and trade stacking occurs.
Yeah.
So it's important that we have visibility of our productivity and profitability for each line.
That makes sense. That's profit projection.
Easy.
So the next document is the change log.
Change log. My favorite part.
So what's a change log?
Change log. So change log.
We actually have a whole 4-hour training session that really pertains to this.
Yeah, and we could probably go for easily another 4
mm-hmm.
after that. So change log is tracking all of the potential extra cost items that you experience on a project. So this is not just changes that you've submitted, but this is tracking potential items, potential cost items on a project. It's important that so we use this to identify and communicate what potential cost items are in front of us, and we use it to make sure that the customer understands what cost items are in play.
And then anytime that we put together pricing for a change, we can understand how that's going to impact the bigger picture profitability of the whole job. So how do most of our clients track this when we meet them?
So this is really a scattered approach depending on the trade, depending on the sophistication.
Well, it's pretty common that they have a change order log that tracks all of the change orders that are in play, right?
In their contract, sure.
Right.
So as their contract changes, sometimes subcontractors will essentially let the general contractors manage this for them.
Mm-hmm.
By only relying on the general contractor's change order numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Many folks are managing changes just by using email. So they'll mm-hmm. send an individual email message saying, here's a cost item, it's going to cost this. and then maybe the contractor or owner doesn't respond to it, and then we get down to the end of the project, and now we're going to have a knockdown drag out because I told you about that extra cost, but they didn't approve it,
right,
and we never had a conversation about it, and there was no way for us to get our arms around it. So the customer essentially doesn't understand how many dollars are on the table, and that creates friction.
Right.
So the important part about a change log is making sure that each change item has a number, that it has an index, that it has a glossary that we can search through and understand, did I review all of the changes or not? You should have a finite list of changes that are indexed, and then you could always get back to those numbers. So for example, if you've submitted changes 1 through 8, and then you skip 9, and then you submit 10, then the customer would probably ask you, what is 9?
Hopefully, if they're paying attention.
Right. So when we have index numbers associated with changes, that gives us the ability to keep our arms around all of the change items that have ever occurred on that project, even if they didn't turn into real change dollars.
Right.
So the change log will, we need to make sure that they have unique numbers that identify them. We want to make sure that for each of those change items, we communicate approximate cost associated with each one of the changes.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a document reference, we want to make sure that we're identifying the RFI or ASI or submittal number that it would be tied to.
Mm-hmm.
We want to give them critical drop-dead dates for the approval of those changes.
If it's not approved by such and such date, that that's going to be a problem.
We want to communicate, is there any schedule impact associated with these changes?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So there are a number of things that we want to track and communicate on the change log, and
right,
then be able to give these to the customer to,
right,
essentially keep them in the driver's seat.
Right. And then don't we also want to check whether or not it was accepted and what date it was accepted and what amount was accepted, because sometimes we'll say that's going to cost $1,000, mm-hmm, and they'll say I'll give you $800.
Yep, absolutely. So we need to always have it in writing,
mm-hmm,
that our changes have been accepted and approved. And the specific language that I'm looking for there, this is just a bonus, you are directed to proceed with extra work and your pricing is approved. So those two pieces are critically important to make sure that not only is the work approved, that you're,
mm-hmm,
directed to do the work, but the pricing that you've submitted is also approved. Many times, mm-hmm, we skip that step and we just, when we're told to proceed, we assume that the pricing...
Right, that they approve the pricing.
Right.
And they don't.
Not necessarily, right? I didn't say that. I just said you need to do the work.
Right. And all we need is those four words, your pricing is approved,
mm-hmm,
in a text, in, mm-hmm, an email, written on a napkin,
yeah,
and that protects our profit at the end of the job, because then if they want to say, oh, we never said so, then, mm-hmm, you say, here it is,
mm-hmm,
you did say so.
Okay.
And then they say, oops, I guess I did. Here you go, here's all your money. I'm not going to complain anymore.
Okay, next item.
Next item
so
is...
So next item that is... your project shouldn't be without is...
So this is item number 5, document 5. It is...
It's Cinco.
That's our... Now you're in Cadence's Spanish world.
Cinco. Document Cinco.
Document Cinco is...
Project Diary.
Project Diary. So tell me what the Project Diary is, because this one is, I think, a little bit more... Those other documents, even if people aren't tracking them or aren't really sure how to build them, I think we've heard of procurement log, we've heard of a change log.
Mm-hmm.
Project diary is something that I think is a little more unexpected. So,
mm-hmm,
tell me more about what a project diary is.
So the project diary is essentially a list of facts or a list of critical pieces of information that have occurred on a project. The place where I started using this would be when I would be managing a subcontractor or managing a situation, and I would get the feeling that something's coming off the railings, off of the rails, and maybe I don't even know what it is at,
mm-hmm,
this moment, but I get the feeling.
It's just the gut feeling that things are going sideways.
I get the feeling, I read into somebody's behavior, I see a message, something suggests that this project is not going to go well, or something about it is going to be problematic.
Mm-hmm.
A risk item starts to rear its head.
Mm-hmm.
At that moment in time, I'll typically stop what I'm doing and I'll document everything that I can recall about how we got to this point.
Mm-hmm.
And then from that point forward, I will document all of the critical pieces of information that happened. And it doesn't have to be complex. It can be sent email on such and such date asking for schedule. Mm-hmm. It can be something simple to remember all of the critical pieces of communication as that project completes. Mm-hmm. So the project diary, and since using it in that capacity, I've started using that on projects where in the beginning of the project, we're documenting the critical dates, the critical milestones of the project, when certain items were updated or communicated, such that when we start to have a problem, then we have all of this information that's been gathered to refresh our memory with respect to how we got here. Right. How did we get here? And then when we start to get into a disagreement with the person on the other side of the table, when we demonstrate that we have all of this information cataloged, mm-hmm. then it typically can take a lot of the wind out of their sails.
Right. When you go back and you can list what dates everything happened on and what happened on those dates, mm-hmm. That just demonstrates that you're paying attention and that you know what's happening. Mm-hmm. This can also be really great when you have to bring in a third party. Mm-hmm. So there was a time when I went into one of our clients and they'd been working with a software company trying to get a piece of software implemented. And they'd been working on it for 2 years, and there was a whole email chain that I was able to read and understand what was happening in this back and forth. And then every time that someone talked to anyone on the phone, it was a black hole. Mm-hmm. I would see references where they said, well, I told you on the phone, but I had no indication of any of those phone calls. I didn't know what anyone agreed mm-hmm. to, what anyone talked about, what was communicated at all. And it made it a lot harder for me to piece together what had happened mm-hmm. so far so that I could get them out of the mess that they were in. So when we keep these kind of diaries, when things are contentious or important, it's great for reducing conflict. It's great for if we go to court later, but it's also great for just giving us the ability to pull things back into control, mm-hmm. to be able to understand what dates are things happening on, who does the delay belong to, mm-hmm. Where are the problems? Where's information being dropped?
How much risk do you actually own? Because right. many times we accept more risk than we properly own.
Absolutely.
So the majority of folks are tracking this type of information in email or in their heads or in scattered documents.
Well, and I would argue to some extent they're not tracking it at all. Mm-hmm. It's happening in email, and then when they need to find out what happened, they just go back. And again, they look at the records that exist, and any physical conversation that happened on site, any phone call, is just gone. Mm-hmm.
So we want to make sure that we're conscious of that when we're tracking the project information, such that if we... I can pick up project diaries today from projects I've ran years ago and understand exactly what happened in a certain circumstance. And I can then, if I wanted to, find all of the key documents that tied to and then construct the story of how that project unfolded.
Right.
So it's important that we have the ability to do that. But anything that happens verbally or on the phone, we will lose it completely mm-hmm. if we don't have it documented. And yep. sometimes it's critically important.
So then what does our Excel spreadsheet look like for a project diary?
We don't really use Excel necessarily. You could, mm-hmm. but
I would still use Excel.
You're welcome to. So the important information is just the date mm-hmm. that the thing occurred, mm-hmm. and then you would have the short description of what happened, mm-hmm. what changed hands, what was requested, and then I suppose you could have the attachment of that actual document or email if you wanted to.
Mm-hmm. So then you really could keep this in a notebook if you wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
Although
I typically use OneNote to track this.
Okay, that makes sense too.
Yep.
So that is the project diary. And the last document that your project should not be without, document number 6.
Numero 6.
is your daily report.
Daily report.
So tell me about a daily report.
Daily report is one of the most important documents on any project. I'm continually startled by how many company we work with, they're $50 million and they don't use daily reports. A daily report is just a personal diary, a professional diary rather, of the foreman or the superintendent working on a construction project.
So it's not like Dear Diary.
It could be.
Today, maybe the superintendent really hurt my feelings.
Okay, not that. So a daily report, the purpose of it is to document which one of our employees, which one of our workers, or how many workers were on site, how many hours did they work, what did they accomplish, what did they work on, were there any safety concerns that they discovered, were there any hindrances, was there anything slowing them down, is there information that they need, and even things as simple as what is the weather, what is the temperature, what is it raining, is it sleeting?
Safety concerns that they see.
I already
Did
covered
you say that. Sorry.
Yeah. But doubly important, all the same. So we
Two
want to
times.
Make sure, yeah, if they were directed to do extra work, if there are questions that are holding them up. So we need to make sure that the foreman and the superintendents understand the level of importance that the daily report holds. Many times they don't. Mm-hmm. That is the daily report.
That's the daily report. And daily reports should be?
Daily.
Daily.
Are you kidding me?
Not once a week.
Not whenever you feel like it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and a part here that Dakota had pointed out as being one of our better talking points, and I think he's right, is that it's often something that people do to say, I have to get the work done. I don't have time today mm-hmm. to do my daily report, especially because I think the most essential people to do these daily reports often are not people who really prefer to sit down and write at a desk. They prefer to be out in it working and dealing with the field.
Yeah, well, and many times they didn't get into that line of work to mm-hmm. be a writer.
Right.
Right? That's not their favorite thing to do. But it's important that if they accept that position in leadership, that they understand that that is of critical importance.
And so when they say, there's work to do, I have to turn the crank, mm-hmm. I have to actually get the work done, I don't have time to do my daily report, what do you tell them?
So I'll ask the foreman, if you didn't perform that little bit of work, would that project ever get done? Ever. Ever, ever, ever in a million years. If you didn't put your bags on and wire that up or install that framing assembly or sheet that wall, would that work ever get done? And the answer is always...
Of course it would.
Of course it would.
Whether they do it tomorrow, whether someone else does it tomorrow.
Right, even if a different company came in and did it, that mm-hmm. work would get
still
done.
Still gets done.
Right. However, if you get 5 days away from your daily report and you forgot what even happened on that day...
You can never reclaim that.
You can never go back. And so the further away that you get from trying to remember a thing, the less accurate it becomes.
Yep.
So we want to make sure that we're capturing what's actually happening on site. It doesn't need to be exhaustive. It can be just a short half sheet or full sheet, but really just a couple of sentences to document what happened.
We can even have an app that we can enter that into. Mm-hmm. There's SharePoint can make it really easy to enter your daily reports. Mm-hmm. We like doing it in OneNote, mm-hmm. and that way it doesn't have to be all written out and then brought back to the office where somebody else has to put that into a computer. You can just enter it directly into your phone. Something I like to harp on is that we all walk around with supercomputers in our back pocket all the time, every day. We live with all the inconveniences of our phone, like being distracted by Facebook, like being interrupted all the time by unwanted phone calls. We should absolutely make use of the benefit of having that computer in our back pocket all day long.
And for the folks who don't enjoy writing, you can just use a voice-to-text app or a point-and-click app with buttons in mm-hmm. it. There are a lot of cheap and free options that are out there that can do a lot of the walking for you.
Mm-hmm. And another good point, if we're already talking about using our little miniature supercomputers, our smartphones, we should also be taking pictures yeah. for our daily reports.
And you could even take video.
Always take pictures and video anytime that you think you might need it, because it's always better to have it and not need it than need it and not have it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's it.
That's it. Those are the 6 documents that your project shouldn't be without.
Yeah. So a lot of these items are pretty tidy to put together and start rolling out. Feel free to reach out if you have any questions or need some support. I think that just implementing a couple of documents that you're not implementing can tremendously reduce your risk and can also put your profit through the roof. Super important tools.
Yep, absolutely. So you can find us at www.thecriticalpathwithmaryandjason.com. We don't have a jetpack this week.
No.
You can find us on Twitter @ArcadeWayfinder. You can find us both on LinkedIn. Just search for our names.
Yeah. We're having our annual party this Friday. Feel free to stop in if you're in the neighborhood.
Yeah, we're super excited about it. We're going to have Ben Bender out, who is our favorite photographer. He's going to be doing video testimonials, so you'll see a super snazzy video come up on our website in the next, I don't know, couple of months.
Keep it conservative.
Well, yeah. I don't know how long it's going to take for him to produce it, and then once he produces it, I have to actually put it up on the website. So between those two things, we got a little bit of a wait time. We also have our book drive coming out right now. It's looking like mid-October. I think we're shooting for October 15.
So to clarify, the book is called Drive. It's not that we're trying to gather books for donation.
Yeah, not a book drive. No. Our book, comma, drive. It's a book about business development, and a lot of the ideas you hear us talking about here on the podcast puts everything together into a simple system that lets you be able to analyze where you're at, figure out where you're trying to go, and then go there. So we don't have a lot of outtakes today because our subject matter is a little bit serious.
Ooh, serious.
we were pretty serious in it today.
Make some outtakes.
Well, okay. So we'll spend the next few minutes trying to make outtakes. So stay tuned for them if we're successful. And if Jason keeps saying inappropriate things, then you will have 10 seconds of silence called Jason's punishment silence right now.
It's called Jason Talks.
It's called Jason Shouldn't Talk.
See you next time.
Delta League sounds like superheroes kind of stuff going on.
That's what we should do.
Captain Marvel trailer came out today.
Captain Hammer?
No, Captain Marvel. She's different. She punched an old lady in the trailer. It's good.
Project Diary.
You can have them start with like a one sentence about like the state of things in the company. They could like talk trash about people.
Getting in dangerous territory here.
It goes in the danger log. It's cool. Yeah. It's cool.
It's terrible.